Hi, I'm Nicholas Briggs, and this is The Sirens of Audio.
So on that note, Philip, do you know what? You're muted. Right, you can go straight into facts. You're muted.
Okay then, I'll try again. Yeah, I've lost it now. G'day, audiophiles. This is The Sirens of Audio, the show that explores the universe of Doctor Who in the audio medium. I'm Dwayne. And I'm Philip. G'day, Dwayne. G'day, audiophiles.
G'day, Philip. How's things going with you?
Things are going fine.
Fantastic.
It's been a very hectic couple of weeks, and it continues to be so, but that's okay.
Have you recovered from all the events?
No. No, haven't recovered yet.
That'll take a bit longer.
Yes, yeah. And just messaging Katie because she's about to fly out. And so she was sending me some messages before she went, which was very kind of her. So, it's been a great time.
Excellent.
But I need to go pick up books now that she's left somewhere.
Of course she has.
She has.
She's got to keep making these stories that she can tell.
Oh, yes. It was the Doctor Who show talked about the event on their podcast this week.
And, thanks to you guys, by the way.
Yes, thank you guys. It was great to hear. And Dave Kitchen made the comment about the fact that nearly every story you heard was brand new because, let's face it, she keeps coming up with new stories all the time.
She sure does. But today's episode is another in our 60th anniversary series. It's not long to go now. Since we've last got together, Philip, they've announced the dates. So the Star Beast is going to be premiering on the 25th of November, 2 days after the 60th anniversary, and the subsequent specials will air weekly after that. So you looking forward to those?
I really am. I'm very excited.
And to sort of set the scene for that, today's episode is going to be a brief discussion on the Big Finish adaptation of The Star Beast, which was released, I was surprised to see, not that long ago. It was only 2019. And this was the adaptation of the comic strip. And I must say, I wasn't a huge fan of those two stories because they're very, very different. But I've got to say, I listened to it a lot more closely this time than I did on its initial release. What about you?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I paid a lot more attention. And I don't remember enjoying it a lot last time, but I certainly really enjoyed it this time. But we'll talk more about that soon, no doubt.
Absolutely. Before we do what I usually do, we have had an Apple Podcast review that I'd like to read out.
Oh, fantastic.
And let me bring that up. Now, a few episodes ago, we had Conrad Westmass on the show, and he was this was a very popular episode, and I think it's because not only has Conrad been a part of the series on audio as one of the Eighth Doctor companions, but he's such a big presence in fandom too. So I think he's very much loved across the board. I was very surprised to see that Conrad wasn't sort of known by some of his friends as the Eighth Doctor companion. Some were surprised that he was even a companion at all.
Don't know how that's possible, but yes, you're right.
Yeah, so obviously he doesn't go around shouting it from the rooftops all the time. But I'd like to read this review, which relates specifically to that episode. It's 5 stars, of course. We love those. And it says, "Whoops, be praised. We finally hear from the brilliant actor and human who played the complex alien, Keres. Westmass should be on prescription. Such a clever mind, warm heart, and massive talent. Plus, he's gorgeous. The perfect ep from this brilliant pod." And that was from Poo Lily, or should I say, is it Poo Lily? I think it's Poo Lily or Pool Illy. It's hard to read some of these names sometimes, but I really appreciate that. So thank you very much for that. It's not very difficult. Just jump over to Apple Podcasts and write us a review. Give us 5 stars. We love to hear from you. We'll read them out on the podcast whenever we can. And also do that for YouTube. If you're watching us on YouTube too, just drop a comment below. And from time to time, we'll pick some comments out and read those. And be sure to subscribe, like, and more importantly, share the podcast wherever you can so that we can get as many people listening as possible. Because we want to share the love. We know you love Big Finish and we want to share it too. And on another note related to our events, particularly the one that unfortunately I had to leave you run by yourself down in Melbourne, Philip. I was very disappointed I couldn't make it, but there was a great comment from John T who sent us a message. And one thing that you were talking about at our events was joining the private Sirens of Audio group on Facebook, which you can do. Just search for at Audio Sirens, and both our page and our Facebook group will come up. If you join the group, you'll get access to extra photos and things like that. So John T says, thanks for coming down and running the convention. I haven't been to one in ages, and while Katie runs the show a lot, I think it all went really well. Size of the venue, the vibe, the entertainment, all very good. Really appreciate it all, and being a Blake 7 fan, also hoping you can get those extra guests next year. Well done again. Thanks. And John T is referring to the announcement that you're possibly going to, shall we say that here on the show? Possibly selling the
event? I would say it's not 100% confirmed, but it's about 80% confirmed. But we won't talk about dates yet.
Very good. So Sally Navette is scheduled to come out to Australia. So any Blake 7, any and all Blake 7 fans should get along to see her. So that will be happening next year, we hope. That's not confirmed, but on the cards. Also in relation to Melbourne, Jamie says, thanks for sending this link. That's the link to the private Facebook group for the Sirens of Audio. The photos are great. I've enjoyed both of your events so far. And sorry I miss Sophie. I will look forward to your future events. It's a very immersive and personal experience without the large crowds, making it very special. So thank you so much for those comments. I think you in particular, Philip, pride yourself in having these events run as intimately as possible so that everyone feels like they're getting something of value out of the day rather than a production line of photo, autograph, out the door, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, not only feels like they're getting something of value, they are getting something of value. And
They still have the feeling.
they have the feels as well as the reality.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, yeah. And certainly, I mean, all the guests that we've had out have all gone out of their way to make fans feel welcome. And I think everyone's walked away feeling like they get to know the person just that bit better. And yep. If you saw Katie, you definitely got a hug as well, because she hugged everyone several times.
Every single person. Yeah, it was fantastic. Okay, thank you for those comments. There is one thing we need to do before we start talking about the Star Beast. And do you know what that is, Philip?
No, Dwayne. What do we have to do first?
We have to jump down the rabbit hole. Let's go. All right. We are down the rabbit hole. And I thought since we're talking about the Star Beast, which is an adaptation to audio, in this occasion, is also being adapted to television very shortly. Out of all the new series showrunners, Russell T. Davies has been the only one, I think, that's adapted certain stories. So he adapted Dalek to a certain extent, even though when we spoke to Rob Shearman, it was kind of the inspiration for Dalek, but it was kind of an adaptation. We had Rise of the Cybermen, which was based on spare parts. Even though it doesn't say spare parts in the credits, it does name Mark Platt. So he was the inspiration for Rise of the Cybermen. We have had Paul Cornell's book, Human Nature, adapted for television. That's all, isn't it? Just those three?
I think so.
And now we've got another one, The Star Beast, which is an adaptation from a comic. So he's gone across the board in all these different mediums. He's adapted something from the book, something from the Big Finish Audios, something from the comic strip now. What do you think, why do you think Russell has chosen to adapt these various things? We can talk about this, what you think about the Star Beast as well, but even though we haven't seen it, but why do you think he's chosen to adapt these stories unlike any of the other showrunners? What's he going for?
I think Russell knows a good story when he hears one. And rather than pretend that it's not coming from the adaption, you might as well own up to it and say, well, this has inspired it. So as much as Dalek was very different in the end to Jubilee, there's a lot of strong similarities. And they could have just pinched it straight out and most people wouldn't have picked it up. But enough people would have been suspicious and gone, eh. And I think, you know, Philip Hinchcliffe did the same thing, didn't he, with Planet of Evil, was, you know, retelling of Forbidden Planet, the Pyramids of Mars, the Mummy stories, the Brain of Morbius was Frankenstein, State of Decay, you know, Dracula. I think the show has always pinched really heavily from mythology and stories outside of Doctor Who. And I think Russell's just, he loves Doctor Who, so he's now pinching from inside pinching the stories himself. Of Doctor Who. And, you know, so he's just, you know, when there's been good stuff written, why not let it be told? And, yeah. Yes, I mean, yeah, all of them. I mean, Family of Blood and...
Human Nature.
Human Nature, you know, because Human Nature is the book. I mean, that's probably the closest adaption that there was. I think it is,
yeah.
But even so, I mean, it still has enough differences and becomes a really powerful story in its own right. So, yeah, I think Russell just knows these are good stories and, you know, rather than have conjecture about where did it come from, the initial idea, he's happy to say, yep, it's come from here. Why do you think he's done it? Do you think it works?
I think it works. It would probably screw with someone's head who's very finicky about canon, particularly if they follow the books. They're going to try and work out how is this canon. Although it was done very well when Big Finish did it with Sharda, how they slot yes. that into the canon. That was yes. extremely clever. I think that's the cleverest thing they've done with an adaptation with a different cast, with a different doctor. But perhaps Russell, I always find Russell is the master at captivating the general audience. And perhaps these adaptations were a way of reminding the diehard fans like him that he still knows us and cares about us. And so he's drawing on these stories that, as you said, are very good stories, and all the diehard fans know they're good stories. The general audience doesn't know, but it's kind of bringing everyone together. I think he is very good at bringing everyone together. And Human Nature in particular was a good one because, as you said, it was closely adapted, the closest adaptation. But he also incorporated the elements of – I've not read the book, so I don't know whether it's called a chameleon arch in the book or whether that was something that was added, whether it was called something different in the book. But he incorporated that idea into the series arc. So later on, we had Professor Yana, who was genetically modified into away from being a Time Lord into a human through the genetic arch, and that was an element from Human Nature. So he incorporated that, which makes me wonder what elements from the Star Beast is he going to use to incorporate into the series ongoing. So there, you know, that could be something we talk about when we talk about the story a little bit more in depth. But I think he's trying to bring us all together by doing adaptations to a degree. There's a possibility that he was trying to get Rob Shearman more involved on, and I'm not sure whether Rob Shearman what sort of worked out in as a television writer. I don't know. What are your thoughts on these writers, because Paul Cornell came back and did something original. He's the only one that's been adapted that's come back and done something original for the TV series.
Well, I mean, Mark Platt wrote for the original, the classic series, didn't he?
Yeah, but not for the new series. Not I'm just talking new series. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he came from the original series and
it was like in reverse. Yeah.
Yeah, backwards. We will never know what things did or didn't work for different writers and why they do or don't come back. Russell is far too polite to ever badmouth anyone, as far as I know. So it's pretty coarse that way. So it's hard to know in terms of, you know, I know Robert Shearman had to do a lot of drafts and, you know, and it wasn't, a lot of it was his fault. You know, lost the right to the Daleks, got the right to the Daleks.
That was
just a mess.
On and off again, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I think all that made things very difficult and very hard. I think we'll just wait and see what happens next. I'm very excited to see what happens in Star Beast, certainly. But in terms of, I mean, yeah, a 1980s comic, But this is because it's the very start of Doctor Who Weekly. I don't read the comic strip in Doctor Who magazine, and I haven't read the comic strip for 20 years or 30 years. But when Doctor Who Weekly first came out in the 1980, and I read the comic strips originally, and I remember the Iron Legion, and I remember the Star Beast. It was the first ones, and I loved them. And then I didn't have time to read the comic strips, and so they went away. But the fact that it's stuck in my memory, is a testament to that era. And Russell's he's older than me, but I suspect it's similar, that there's just this nostalgia that's there. And it's just this, it's an amazing concept where you've got something really cute and cuddly and gorgeous who's utterly evil. And it'll be interesting to see whether people know that, because the ads aren't showing Meep as being bad at all. And so, for those of us who know the audio and know the comic strip, we know that Meep is evil. Well, he may not be in this, but in terms of in every other iteration, this gorgeous, cute little cuddly guy is actually evil, really evil. But none that's come out of the ads at all. So I suspect most people aren't going to know the comic, aren't going to know it, and they're all going to be caught by surprise by this cute and cuddly thing. So I can't wait to see what the reaction is when the episode's shown.
Is it possibly because he knows it's being distributed worldwide by Disney as well, that it's more of a Disney style character, which is good to introduce a Disney audience to? Because the majority of the audience is going to be Disney. Let's face it. There's a massive audience in the UK.
The Disney audience is very different. As much as we tend to think Disney is Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Disney has changed. And you look at Disney Plus, there's a lot of very strong adult violent stuff in it. So I'm not sure the Disney audience is the cute and cuddly audience that we think it is. As I said, he's dipped into Doctor Who comics from the 1980s to give us Meep. He's dipped into 1960s Doctor Who to give us the Toymaker. We don't know what's happening in the middle episode at all, I don't think. Do we have any idea about what's happening in there?
No idea. This is the most intriguing episode of the three for me, the third
one. So he's deliberately dipping into Doctor Who folklore as part of the 60th celebration. And I think recognizing the magazine, the Doctor Who magazine, recognizing that as part of the folklore is a sensible thing to do. And as I said, I'm curious. I can't wait to see what he does for the second episode. But I'd be once again surprised if he's not going to dip into Doctor Who lore elsewhere. Everyone's had a chance now to go and find the comic and read the Star Beast. I don't think most people will have done. A lot of people won't even connect the fact that it is from a comic originally. So it's going to be, I'm looking forward to seeing what the reaction is.
Very good. All right. On that note, let's jump up out of the rabbit hole and we'll start our conversation on the Star Beast itself. And I'm going to read the blurb and go into the trailer, but keep in mind that this was released as a box set with the Iron Legion adaptation. So the trailer is going to incorporate both of those stories. Here is the blurb. 1980 AD. In Yorkshire, the authorities have dismissed reports that an unidentified flying object was seen plummeting towards the ground, moments before the explosion that destroyed the Black Castle steel mills. After all, Black Castle is the last place on Earth aliens would ever want to visit. Local teenagers Sharon and Fudge know better, because they found an actual space alien hiding in the allotments. He's their alien, their secret, and his name is the Meep. He's not the only alien in Black Castle, though. His pursuers, the terrible Warath warriors, are on his trail, along with their unwitting accomplice, the Doctor.
Coming soon from Big Finish Productions, Doctor Who, the comic strip adaptations, Volume 1.
Good evening. The news at 9 o'clock on Wednesday, the 20th of February, 1980.
Ah! I'm a monster. I'm a monster.
Fudge! You're a wazzock. That's what you are. Nearly scared us to death.
M1000CM900LXX1X. That's 1979. Date of manufacture, 1979. That's now. Oh gods, how I love war. Let my Iron Legion march forever, for only through destruction am I alive. Without it, I am a dead thing.
Hyperspace jump completed. Planet Sol 3 in sight.
That is where the radiation trail leads.
It is, sir.
Then pinpoint the target. At once.
I have conquered this town, the place they call Stockbridge.
That's the last of the neck bolts, so all it needs is one good twist and a tug.
Run, Shad, run!
Fudge! I think he's crying.
Don't get too close, he might have space mange.
He was bleeding, remember?
Why are they keeping us standing around? What do they want with us, Pip?
I don't know, Doc. Funny that. Still, look on the bright side. They've not shot us.
Ah! Surrender or I'll be annihilated.
I surrender. I repeat that. Goodness, is that a chieftain?
I am the only chieftain here.
I meant the tank.
Pretty Polly.
Watch out, Mr. Morris.
Oh, dear.
Hey, Doc, they're using backed guns on us.
Hola.
Big Finish.
I said, hola!
We love stories.
Look, whoever you are, the least you could do for a fellow whose space-time ship you shanghaied is hola back.
Doctor Who and the Star Beast, the facts and the trivia. Written by Pat Mills and John Wagner. Adapted by Alan Barnes. Starring Tom Baker. Directed by Nicholas Briggs and sound design and music by Alastair Locke. Recorded in October 2016 and released March 2019, it was recorded Audio Sorcery. The original story appeared as a comic in Doctor Who Weekly, published by Marvel Comics in April 1980. The artist was Dave Gibbons. In the comic, the Doctor is travelling also with K-9, but he's been taken out of the audio, but he is also joined by Sharon and Fudge. The newsreader is modelled upon contemporary newsreader Angela Rippon, and Rippon would actually go to play the role in the audio adaptation. Sharon in the comic strip became the first known person of colour to act as a continuous companion to the Doctor, predating Mickey Smith and Martha Jones by more than a quarter of a century. Both Pat Mills and John Wagner are credited for the story, but they used to take it in turns to write the comics month about. So this one was actually written by just Pat Mills. There's a very different feel to the comic book adaptions, which Tom Baker commented on when he recorded it, knowing things were a bit different. And that's the facts and the trivia.
Thank you very much, Philip. So you said before that you don't think you enjoyed it much when you first heard it. First of all, why do you think that is? And why did you enjoy it now?
Yeah, so that's a good question, and I have been trying to ponder why. I'm not sure I was really wanting to hear comic book adaptions when they came out. And it does have a very different feel. It is, I don't think it's childish, but it is young. And I think maybe I was just in a bad mood. I failed to pick up the humour.
But you get that way sometimes with audio.
You get that
if you're
way.
If you're on the wrong mood, it's your mood that leaves the imprint on the experience.
Yeah, quite definitely. It's really bizarre how things affect you. And as I said, I mean, all these audiences have got these really strong memories in terms of where I was when I first listened to them, where I was walking, what I was doing, with all sorts. And I still go to places, and it has a really strong memory. I just came from the pool before, and I listened to all of Matthew Perry's autobiography at the pool, which I finished about a month ago. I think I recommended it on the podcast a while ago. And of course, Matthew Perry's just passed away. And the whole time I was at the pool, I was actually feeling a great deal of just sadness. Grief would be too strong, but I was just feeling sad about, you know, someone younger than me who's just died.
The way he died was being at the pool. Well, did that make you think as well?
I don't think it was that, but it was just definitely like, because as I said, I listened to his whole book at the pool. I guess I felt I got to know him a bit by listening to his story and the way he talked. And the way the book was written, and of course he spoke the whole book to me, and so yeah, it's just a shock. So I do think the mood you're in has an effect on what you're listening to, and so I can't remember what mood I was in when it came out at the time. I certainly didn't remember it having a big impact on me, but once again, listening to it again, I picked up all the humor this time, and I picked up the funny lines And Tom Baker is just being charming and so silly. And of course, too, having seen some visuals now of what's coming in the Star Beast, there was little things that happened that made me click, oh, hang on a second. So, I mean, we've seen the visual of the fact that Meep gets poked in the eye. Now, in the audio adaption, it's not Meep that gets poked in the eye. It's one of the other creatures who, you know, their eyes look like light switches. And one of the characters, you know, tries to switch on the light switch by actually poking the other creature in the eye. Now, I'm not sure whether that's the takeoff or what's going on there, but it's very similar. And also, you know, just in fact, you know, you've got the main character in the Star Beast, you know, a dark, you know, the first black companion for the Doctor in the comic strips anyway. And here you've got, you know, and we do know that, you know, Donna's daughter is black. So there's a lot of things that you can see. Oh, there are these links here going on. So I'm really curious to see how they do it. But as I said, I was always in a good mood. I laughed a lot. I thought it was very clever. There's a lot of bizarre techno babble, which was just amusing. I saw Fudge more as a bit of a Doctor Who fan in terms of, you know, his nerdy
bit of a nerd
comment. He was a total nerd, and he's, you know, but his knowledge of spaceships and things based on the science fiction shows he's watched or books he's read. I was thinking, it felt like he knew what he was talking about because of all that background he's got from science fiction. Yeah. How did you find it, Dwayne?
No, I really enjoyed it this time. Of course, I was listening to it more closely because of what's coming up with the adaptation on television. I was trying to think which characters would be used where, because obviously we've got Donna and we've got Rose. She's called Rose, isn't she? So who is going to play who? Because we've got the two teenage characters, Fudge and Sharon. So and we know Sharon goes off with the Doctor at the end. So is the Sharon character going to be Donna or Fudge, or are they just reworking those two characters all together?
Possibly merging them together. I mean, there's a motherness, so Donna could be playing more of the mother character.
Yes.
But see, you've got the whole Noble family, so it's... I do suspect it's going to be very strongly stretched.
It also got me thinking, could it possibly be that Rose... Because there are elements of Rose and her, particularly elements around identity. Fudge was, there was issues of identity with Fudge as well in different ways, but that could be something that's picked up and drawn out into the story on television. Is it Rose who goes off for a few adventures with the Doctor, these next three adventures? Because if you look at the artwork, you've got the Doctor and Donna standing there. You've got space to have another character standing there in those posters. So could it be that Rose does go off for those few episodes? I don't know. So it's all going to be very interesting to see how it pans out. I was also thinking about the Meep itself. Now, we had Gary Russell on adamantly saying recently that it's not Beep the Meep, it is the Meep. In the audio adaptation, though, we do have them calling him Beep the Meep over and over again. So I did pick up on that.
I know.
And I'm thinking, hang on, didn't Gary just have a go at anyone who calls him Beep the Meep? That's not his name.
Gary was gone by the time this was done. He would have been not happy about it, I'm sure. If you ever listen to stuff, which he doesn't very often.
But see, Alan Barnes is the comic man. He came into Big Finish through the comic strips. So I'm not sure whether he's just picked up on what Beep the Meep became or whether it was originally the Meep and it's changed. So I don't know what the actual genesis of it is. I assume because Gary's written the book that he's gone back and he would know and it's all fresh in his mind. So I would assume that Gary is right. But I just found it interesting that the audio was calling him Beep the Meep over and over again towards the
end. What's he called in the other Big Finish appearance? Because he's in a free episode from Big Finish.
It's Beep the Meep.
Beep the Meep there too. Okay.
But in the extras when they talk about it, because I can't remember hearing it. It's been so long since I've heard that one. It would have been 20 years, I reckon, since I've heard that.
Oh, really? I've listened to it again. It is fantastic. It is so funny.
What's the name of it again?
That's a good question. Toby, you've got to remember. It's with Colin
played
Baker.
By Toby Longworth plays the Meep.
The ratings war.
So, okay, yeah, the ratings war. I do remember that.
So it's a free episode by Big Finish called The Ratings War. It stars Colin Baker and Beep the Meep. but it is such an excellent episode.
Is it available just free on the website? Yes, you can get it for free.
It's free on the website. It came out with the first episode of Invaders from Mars when they were trying to advertise and push Paul McGann's second series.
And the cast list does say Beep the Meep. Yep, doesn't say the Meep.
Just two. So it's got Jane Goddard, Robert Jezrick, Tony Longworth, Alistair Locke. I mean, what a cast! There's only five people in the cast, but it is so funny. Set in a recording studio with the Meep, with his own television program, trying to take over the world. It is a scream and free. So strongly recommend people, you know, download that from the Big Finch website.
But it's interesting, Tom Baker's reaction. I thought Nick Briggs was an interesting choice to direct this because it certainly doesn't seem his style, but I guess these comic adaptations aren't anyone's style. It was the first time they were doing it.
At the time that Nick was the only person who directed Tom.
Right.
So up until the last couple of years, no one else ever directed Tom except for Nick.
Yeah, yeah.
And then more and more now other people are directing Tom, but up until 2 or 3 years ago, it was only ever Nick that directed him.
Yeah. But it was interesting that Alan Barnes said these two stories, The Iron Legion and The Star Beast, were his favourite Doctor Who stories of any media.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. So there's a Doctor Who story for absolutely everybody.
It is a wonderful story. I still remember reading it when I was 10 years old.
What I also found myself doing while listening to the audio, because I'm not a comic book reader, I mean, the most I ever read in comics was I read the Asterix and Tintins when I was at school. I never read any other comics really apart from that. As I was listening, particularly the parts where the Meep was talking to himself inside his head, I was visualizing that on the comic page and how that would be illustrated as well. So I thought that was really fascinating, that it was actually making me think in terms of a comic strip. It was fascinating what it was doing.
Yeah, that hook, once again, beautifully done on audio, and I assume they'll do a similar thing maybe with the television, which is, what's outwardly happening with this cute little cuddly guy and then the internal
monologue going.
Hatred. It's just... and that monologue stuff was so funny.
Yeah, it was great. It was great.
A lot like Strax, actually. A lot of it was what Strax is that loud.
Yes.
I'm going to destroy you, and except Strax isn't serious, whereas the Beep is.
Keep in mind also that this was 1980, so it was well before E.T. I wonder if Spielberg had been reading Doctor Who magazine and got the idea for E.T. from this, or at least the opening parts.
E.T.'s not cute, though. He's an ugly so-and-so. Oh, but yeah, the opening is a lot like this, yes.
Yes. Yeah, the alien mainly.
Yes.
And hiding him in the bedroom. Yeah, so it also got me thinking about the difference between the actress here, which the actress was, what was her name?
Bethan Dixon-Bate,
playing the Meep, and how Miriam Margulies is going to be playing it. So I can see, just hearing, just talking about those internal monologues, I can hear Miriam Margulies doing those so well. She is just perfect casting for that.
Both sweet and evil at the same time.
Exactly. She is, I can't imagine anyone else. Well, I can because I've got it right here, but I can just see that's going to just be brilliant.
Certainly for star name quality, Miriam is a brilliant choice for the role because, huge star name.
Yeah, but what she does as well.
What she does is hilarious. Great. And, she does the nasty so well.
Yeah, interesting how Nicholas Briggs said in the extras too that he cast a woman in the role of the Meep because had that more childlike quality, even though the Meep is male in the comic strip. Got to have that sort of more childlike quality, which the female voice gives very nicely, even though it was treated too. I think it worked well, and they're obviously doing it again in the TV series.
Yeah. No, I'm just trying to think whether Meep really is gender specific. I know the Meeps are
I'm just going by what Nick said in the extras. He said in the comic strip it's a male.
Maybe
he said it's not specified. But I think it's masculine. I'm pretty sure. Right. All right. So anything else you wanted to bring out from the Star Beast?
I loved its simplicity. I mean, the music score was simple, but still effective. And so I thought that was nicely done. What else stood out for me? I mean, the whole sound design was great. I mean, once again, it was interesting too. It had a simplistic quality, like a childlike quality to a lot of the sound effects, but they still all worked. And so that I think worked really well. I do think the cast were marvelous. I do think, you know, Fudge and Sharon worked really well. I do think their mother worked really well, and they're discussing biscuits and, you know, the hilarious scene with the doctor talks about negotiations, and she starts negotiating biscuits, which wasn't the point at all. But then you have this huge discussion about what sort of biscuits people would have. There's just so many little precious moments. The comic strip isn't that large, and so to get a 4-episode story out of it, they have had to put padding in. But a lot of the padding they put in has been comedy, and it's just comedy gold. So as long as you're laid back, relaxed, ready just to enjoy a fun story, I think this is a great listen for you.
And very soapy, very domestic. The more I think about it and how it relates to Russell T. Davies, I think, well, of course he's adapting this one. This is just suits him to a T.
Yes. Yeah. And there's a bit of timey-wimey stuff at the end that throws things out. And you're right. It's a family in the north. There's
so much. Which makes
me
think, because Donna's not from the north, is she? She's London.
No. They're London. So, I mean, that's not going to be quite the same. But in terms of Russell, is he from Swansea originally? I don't know. But you can really understand where this story would appeal to Russell, because it has all those elements. It has a strong dominating mother who's a single mother. It's got the children. It's got, it really does work on every level as a Russell story.
Yeah. So I can certainly recommend grabbing this just to give you a little preview. You can get it on download if you want to hear it before the TV version comes out in a few weeks' time. I would hardly recommend you do so. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and grab the free copy of The Ratings War as well.
Absolutely.
Another very entertaining story.
Very good. All right, on that note, if there's nothing further to say, we can go straight into our recommendations or what we've been listening to.
Yeah, and what are these turners, by the way, Dwayne? I think it's yours, isn't it?
Well, let me just check my list. The list says it's your turn. So I was going to go first, but I can't because the list says.
Okay, I'll go first then. Just because I haven't had enough to listen to, I downloaded from Amazon Slayer. So I think people know I love a bit of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. A lot of the original cast have been put together for a audio story. Audible got the rights to put together a story. And so a whole heap of the original cast, some of whom didn't survive the show, are in it. And you've got to listen to hear how that happens, but there's a reason why. But it hasn't got Buffy, but it has got lots of the other cast, including who came to Torchwood, John Masters. I can't think of his first name. Captain Jack. No, Captain John, played by someone Masters. James Masters. There you go. Coming to me very slowly. This is...
I couldn't think of the other J name.
I really wish I'd pulled up in front of me so I could be looking at it. I sound so much more intelligent. But James Master, Amber Benson, several others of the original cast in it. And it is a really excellent story. As a first off, I think there's plans to do more, and you can see it's a bit of a cliffhanger. You can see where it's possibly going to go if it sells well. I think Buffy was just crying out to be reached into the audio medium. And if you've got an Audible, you can download it. It's a Slayer. It's really worth a listen to. I know it's not your thing, Dwayne, but for some people out there, I'm sure they would enjoy it. So that's my recommendation. What about you, Dwayne? What are you going to recommend?
Well, I'm going to recommend something a little bit different, something that I just stumbled across today because it's been out for a few weeks now, but the new Third Doctor Adventures box set, Intelligence for War, has been one that I've been dying to listen to, but I just haven't had a chance yet. And I was just looking for some reason at the Big Finish page, and I went behind the scenes. There's a backstage tab. If you look at that tab, there is a video there of behind the scenes like your extras on the audio download, but it's a video. So they've got a video behind the scenes of the Audio Sorcery Studios, Nicholas Briggs, Tim Treloar, Daisy Ashford, John Coleshaw, and the guest cast for Intelligence for War, all there talking about the story in the studio setting. And it's fantastic. I've never seen Big Finish do that before. If they have, I've missed it. This is the first one I've seen. So I can highly recommend you just jump over and have a look at that behind the scenes. It goes for about 8 minutes, your normal behind the scenes runtime for something like that. But as a video, I think it's fantastic. Really good. Yeah, so that's my recommendation.
I will go have a look at that.
Excellent. Now, as for the 60th anniversary, that's only a few weeks away. But during that time, I am moving house. I am traveling through several states. And I'm also trying to edit podcasts. So we are going to try and get these out. Usually our podcasts go out on a Saturday in Australia. But if they, for some reason, don't appear, please accept my apologies in advance. I will get them out to you as soon as I possibly can, because I'll be editing them on the road. And even though there may be some delays or technical hitches from time to time, we're not stopping at all, are we, Philip?
No, we're not. We're just going to deal with more time zone changes and other issues. But we'll
that's right. I'm going to be 3 hours behind you soon. So that could be interesting. All right.
I mean, you're in Tasmania. You're already 3 years behind me.
I thought I was 20 years behind everyone else.
Well, true. I was trying not to be that rude.
So I grew up in Sydney, so I can give these jokes. Say these jokes. All right. Thank you very much, Philip. It's been great to have your company today and to talk about this, and look forward to seeing you next time.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to talking to you about this with the actual TV show.
Yeah, we'll come back together and do a review on that too, eh?
Indeed.
Just for a change. All right. Until next time, we'll catch you later.
See you later, everyone.
This has been the Sirens of Audio episode 177. The Star Beast comic strip adaptation, with your hosts Philip Edney and Dwayne Bunny, looking forward to the 60th anniversary specials of Doctor Who. Original theme music composed by Joe Kramer. More about us from sirensofaudio.com. Comment below to let us know what you thought of the episode, or you can contact us via email at sirensofaudio@gmail.com or via any one of our socials @AudioSirens. Thanks for listening, audiophiles. We'll hear you next time.